Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the
next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. I am your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, and joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you. I have a feeling we're not going to be seeing eye to eye, at least early on in this show.
Yeah, you know, that's what fun would it be if we agreed all the time, you know? Good Monday to you, sir. How are you?
Good. We have plenty to talk about. Again, if you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. That number, 347-215-7598. Once again, get in line. Plenty of phone lines are available and open, 347-215-7598. If you want to text us or tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya and at Steve Max Boxing. But let's go to round number one from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the 155-pound title of the world. It was won in controversial, if you want to call it that, split decision in 12 rounds. Saul Alvarez defeats Arizlande Lara, moving to 44-1. Your scores, Dave Moretti, 115-113 for Lara. Jerry Ross, the opposite direction for Saul Alvarez, and then the most controversial scorecard of the year, perhaps, Levi Martinez, has Alvarez up 117-111. The undercard, featherweights in action, Abner Morris gets back into the swing of things with a 10-round decision over Jonathan Oquendo. Then a junior lightweight, it was a barn burner while it lasted. Francisco Vargas blasts out Juanma Lopez in three. Then a junior welterweight feature, a very strong outing here for Mauricio Herrera. 12-round decision over the heavy-handed Johan Perez. Gabe, I'll give you the stage. What did you think of Alvarez, Lara, and the decision?
You know, I've watched this fight twice. I watched it live. I had it a draw. Which I was actually surprised. I kind of felt like they were going to give it to Alvarez. I felt like he was a little more aggressive, and I liked that. But then, you know, I watched it. Then I looked at my scorecard. It was a draw. I didn't have a problem with that. I didn't have a problem with either guy really getting the decision. Levi Martinez is just flat-out ridiculous. But then I watched it again today, and I had not a clear win because there's a tight fight, and it was you need to really pay attention. But I had Lara winning. I had it 6-5, 1-even. The 10th round was a tight round, and I don't know if we're going by copy stats or show stats, whatever they call them. That was the round they allegedly landed both 11 punches. But it was a nip-and-tuck fight, you know, and you can break it down a lot of ways. People look at those numbers, and they say, well, he only landed 10 more punches. But you look at the total punches landed, 107 to 97, and really what it tells me is that over 12 rounds, if that's all that's landed, it's a defensive fight, which is Lara's style. I didn't think that he ran. I thought at times he did, and those are the rounds I clearly gave to Canelo. But I thought a lot of it, for me, resembled almost like De La Hoya Trinidad. But he was very effective. I mean, by the second round, Saul Alvarez's eye, which was getting hit with straight lefts all night long, was swelling up. So we talk about damage and the alleged damage of the body work of Canelo Alvarez, and a lot of it landed on the guard. I think you have to score that eye, which was swollen up and was kind of stuck all night long. It was the first punch combo landed was a 1-2, and the last in the final round by Lara was a 1-2. I thought it was a boxing lesson. Was it entertaining? No, but that's not part of the criteria for scoring a fight.
Gabe, you're a better man than I. I'm not watching that again, and I was there. I'm sorry. And people say, well, let's do a rematch. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't do a sequel to Gigli or Waterworld or Ishtar, okay? Once was enough. It's just a bad mix of styles. And, Gabe, I admit, I think Lara boxed well for large segments. But there's a very fine line, Gabe, between boxing and just being flat-out negative. And I thought at times when he stood inside the pocket and let his hands go, he could beat him with the left hand at all times. And the eye showed that. To me, and I want to go back to what Don King said at the infamous press conference for Trinidad De La Hoya, and there were a lot of parallels between the two fights. And Don King said, in defense of his guy, boxing is a game of aggression. Not regression. This ain't a track meet, brother. Now, did I think he absolutely ran? No, but there were times you got to sit in the pocket. And you know, the punch stats to me, I think, again, those go up there with pound for pound list as mental masturbation. If
yeah,
you thought Lara won, I don't have any reservation or any objection to that. The word that I hate is robbery. Because, Gabe, you feel even strongly that Lara won, you had it by all of 1 point. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
And one rogue scorecard of Levi Martinez is completely overshadowing this event. Now, let's talk a little about Alvarez. Here's the fundamental problem with Alvarez. I think he's got good fundamental tools, but he has one fatal flaw, Gabe. He only has one gear. Like I said, he's that car that goes 55 miles per hour on the fast lane that frustrates the hell out of you. Number two, Gabe, he has slow, heavy feet. And I think any modicum of mobility is always going to trouble him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really reminded me a lot of De La Hoya Trinidad, this fight. And that ultimately the fair score is kind of a draw because neither guy took over the fight. You know, Alvarez had some moments. He got to the body. I think a lot more was made of that stat than really exists in the fight when watching it again. The body attack, I really don't think. I think Lara was covering up, and he lost a middle rounds for me, but you know, he had to tire at some point. He was moving so much. And so his offense went away, much like De La Hoya's did late in their fight. But the difference was that Lara reasserted himself and down the stretch, and that's what got him the fight for me, and you know, got him the draw, and then got him the 1 point win. Boy, I mean, Canelo. When are we going to keep lowering the bar for what's supposed to be the pound for pound future of the sport? First, it's like he's done. Then it's like the resume. You know, I've heard that line of thought. Well, look at his resume. Yeah, but look how he looked against that resume. I didn't have him beating Trout. Thought it was a close fight, but he looked like crap. I didn't have him winning this fight. It was a close fight, but he also kind of looked like crap. He's kind of mediocre. And then against Floyd, he was completely blanked. This is one of the things that bothers me about this fight is that people don't score the four criteria. Ring generalship and defense, when there's not a lot of action, you got to go to the other things. And if a guy's missing all night or if he's, quote-unquote, running all night and won't let you engage, but that's your only way to win is by hitting him with your heavy hands and cutting off the ring and forcing a fight, you can't do that, guess what? You're losing. Just because a guy doesn't always make you pay because he made you miss doesn't mean that you're hitting him still.
Gabe, here's the thing, though. And again, maybe you might disagree with this. But if you had two Arizlandi Laras in that ring, you'd have a game of tag where nobody would be it. I don't think there is a fight without Saul Alvarez.
I think you had two counterpunchers. That's what I said going into the fight. Saul's not your normal Mexican. He's not an aggressive guy. As we saw with Floyd, he didn't fight like Angulo, who did better against Lara than he did, who went into sheer aggression and stick-to-itiveness. Granted, you know, the difference between Saul and Angulo, apparently, is that he could take a better shot to the eye. But he got stuck with that same left hand all night long. But the difference was there wasn't a jab. I mean, he was held to 9 jabs landed out of 183 thrown. I'm not big on show stats either, but watching the fight again, I was like, yeah, it looks about right. I mean, his jab was completely negated. He's usually a 52% punch stat, you know, power puncher, sort of like the highest tracked guy. He was held to 38% in this fight. I think those things are significant, that if he wanted to fight a certain way, then it would have been fought that way, you know, I mean, if he was successful at it, but it wasn't all night long. I mean, granted, I don't want to see Lara, but again, it's two counterpunchers fighting, and then one was forced to lead and was very unsuccessful at it, while the other guy got to do what he normally does, which is Lara. Do I want to see it again? Absolutely not.
Gabe, you say that people are bringing up the term pound for pound in terms of picking up the mantle. Gabe, I disagree. I think they really mean to say pay-per-view mantle.
No,
I don't think you could look at this fight and say this is one of the 10 best fighters in the world if you care about that stuff. The biggest lack of adjustment where I blame Canelo, because I can make an argument, if a guy moves like Lara, it's almost impossible at times to cut off the ring. Maybe. Because people say his body work didn't do any damage. I'll disagree. I've never seen Lara actually run that much. In the past, I've said Lara is fairly entertaining. He stood in the pocket in other fights. I think he was affected by certain body shots. That's when he decided to scamper around the ring. That being said, the one thing I didn't understand about Canelo Alvarez is that he would cut off the ring towards his left, and he would force Lara to move to his right, which meant he could lead him in the right hand, kind of the way Juanma Lopez had traps set against him by Orlando Salido in the first and second fights, especially the first one. After the first couple of right hands where you just absolutely pulverize and pummel that top rope, someone needs to tell you, like, change the trajectory of your right hand. Don't aim it for the head. Aim it to the chest and anticipate where this guy is going, which is towards his left side. And that, to me, is alarming. If you have slow feet, you have slow feet. But if you're going to keep throwing the right hand at the same angle and the same distance and the same speed every time, that, to me, is something that is very systemic as a breakdown. And that, to me, was the most disappointing part. Listen, I'll make this argument, though, and we know the politics of boxing, Gabe, and the business of boxing. We know that this is a guy that draws the tickets in Las Vegas. We also understand what he means to Oscar De La Hoya's company. So with that being said, did Arislande Lara, should he have known better coming in the way this fight was going to be judged?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot. That, you know, you and I look at fights, I think, pretty close to the same way in that we're taking in all the aspects and taking in those political aspects and probably the way it's going to go and what we want to see. But, you know, I mean, just as a pure boxing match, I don't think he won. But I think in terms of what's good for the sport, I don't necessarily think that a mediocre fighter being hailed as the best we have to offer is that great for the sport. But because people come out and see him and he can create events and help other guys develop, if there's a kid that I think is a future world champion and a real legit fighter, and Jason Quigley that made his pro debut on that card, I think that's what is good for the sport with Canelo Alvarez. I think ultimately he's going to make some good action fights too if matched correctly, but I think it's kind of just funny that the guy gets at the end and he's like, you ran from me, you didn't stand and fight with me. That's not really in the rules that he's supposed to do that. But, you know, maybe he'll get better. I think physically he's hit his ceiling, but experience will count for a lot with him over the years. I think he'll get better as time goes on in those regards if he can keep winning. And it takes more than a slouch to stay with Arislande Lara to not get knocked out and fall all apart against Floyd. The things he's done are not unimpressive, but I don't know if he's not going to ever turn me on as a fighter, really. It just doesn't really excite me. He's kind of boring, kind of bland.
Gabe, do you think that because of one scorecard that is such an outlier in Levi Martinez, let's say he had this fight scored 115-113 like Jerry Roth, do you think there would be nearly this much outrage over this decision?
No, I don't. I think if it was close, you know, that guy just makes it look like, you know, Lara never had a chance. And on some level, he didn't. You know, by taking into account all the realities here, he was already kind of down on the cards. He should have fought with some urgency and really looked for a knockdown or to really put it on, to break his face completely instead of just kind of crack it. No, I don't think people would be completely flipped out. I think they'd be like, that's, you know, they would be like murmurs. But this just, Levi Martinez, it's funny because I don't know if I said it on our show or Leave It in the Ring, but I said this guy's going to be the difference. The other two guys, not so much. And I do find it interesting, though, that Jerry Roth scored for Lara, who was more the De La Hoya in this mix, and he scored for Trinidad in the other one. Maybe it's a De La Hoya thing that Jerry's got. But certainly 117, 111, I mean, do you see any way that that's possible? Well, what angle was that guy sitting at?
The golden angle. Moving on. Let's take a look at this undercard, a mixed bag of excitement and monotony. Abner Mares, Gabe, I don't want to say anything yet. It's just one camp. But when you go to Virgil Hunter, you don't go to Virgil Hunter to become a fan-friendly, exciting fighter, do you?
No. And here's the thing. You know, I think you're looking for defense. I think you're looking for a cerebral approach. But, you know, Abner is kind of like a Mexican Tim Bradley to me. Neither of them has really a lot of pop. They hit strong because they're well-built dudes that fit their weight class. You know, I think Abner's going to be a strong 126. He looked in very good shape, although not quite the shape I was expecting. Didn't look quite as ripped as normal, but maybe that's just a new approach that they're taking up here. But he's a guy that's going to have to be like a multi-tool player because he doesn't have one-punch knockout power. And, you know, in this fight I just saw a rusty guy who kept forgetting to use his jab. He had a really bad cut. I thought they handled it very well. And he just kind of dealt with a crisis situation. You know, Kendo is not a guy that he was going to be a guy that's going to go rounds. I think he's ultimately beatable, but it wasn't exactly a one or two round knockout special that they gave Abner to come back and shake some rust off. He got some good, I think, good rounds in. You know, I don't know what to say at this point. You know, with Hunter, to me, it always takes like three fights, and that's when the third fight is when you see it gel with a new trainer. So it's kind of wait and see. But yeah, is Hunter going to make him blood and guts? No, but I think matchmaking will take care of that for Abner.
When Abner Mars was asked at the post-fight press conference, do you want to get revenge on Johnny Gonzalez, he said, the fighter in me says yes, but my management, well, that already means you don't want him when you're already saying that. Because that was a very definitive black or white question. And I don't blame him because in the first three, four rounds, he looked very tentative, did Abner Mars. And then I thought in the second half, his class showed and he opened up the fight over Jonathan Oquendo. Gabe, I want to say this right now. Whoever allows Juanma Lopez to fight again has blood on their hands. And I have a lot of admiration for Juanma. He's given us a lot of great moments. And I think that third round was really kind of a capsule of the rise and the downfall and kind of a picture of what Juanma was, a guy that was talented yet flawed and ultimately had an early breakdown in his career. And I just really think God, that he was not allowed to come out for that fourth round against Francisco Vargas.
Yeah, it was just mop-up duty at that point, and just would have been sad to see. You know, I don't need to see him knock stone cold and, you know, the stretcher, or he's just out for a long time and we're all scared. Like, it just didn't need to happen. The fight was pretty spectacular. It was just really just all-out warfare that last round, and that was his undoing. He was a guy that couldn't help himself. He was like, he never learned how to just be sneaky and set up his power, break a guy down professionally. It was kind of feast or famine with Juanma, and that fight was a great indicator of that. You're absolutely right, though. I mean, a guy that's losing that way and just looks like he can't take a punch very well anymore, that guy needs to be sat down. And I don't think for like a year, I think it's you revoke his license and you just say, dude, you know. Maybe you look at him after a year, but you know, at this stage of his career, that's a long time. I fear for his safety, without question.
If he was a horse, Gabe, he'd either be taken to stud or the glue factory, because I did not think this fight would go very long. I thought Francisco Vargas did what he was supposed to. He's the younger, stronger, fresher fighter, and Juanma Lopez. And we've seen other fighters like this when they get hit. There's a disconnect. I saw it with Augie Sanchez for years, Terry Norris.
Mm-hmm.
When a guy just cannot take a punch, you start to think there's a neurological problem. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on Blog Talk Radio. Sometimes what you see is what you get, and if a guy can't take a shot, it is what it is. Gabe, I'm going to say this right now. Mauricio Herrera, to me, was the most impressive boxer on this whole pay-per-view card. This version of Mauricio Herrera, I know he's already 33-34. I think he is coming into his own, outside of power, as a complete all-around boxer.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, this version of Mauricio Herrera beats Danny Garcia. Oh, wait a minute. You already did that. he really just kind of – I was really curious going into the fight. Was he going to be flat? You know, like you get to that pinnacle, you think you won – everybody else does too, and then you don't win. What are you going to be like in your next bout? And to me, he fought like a champion. And he's just he's an interesting guy. He just is evolving. He came late to the sport, and he gets more and more comfortable. I think his front side offense has become more complete. You know, it's more a part of his game. He knows how to rely on the jab. He knows how to break a guy down. And I think he's always going to mean 12-round fights, but I don't really mind it. I mean, I love his rhythm. And Frankie Duarte would always he was a fighter, but he was a trainer over at Fortune Gym, and we would talk about the fights all the time. And he would say how fighters don't have a bounce anymore, or this kind of this natural rhythm, and where they're kind of sliding forward, and it's like a perpetual motion machine that leads to their combinations. And Mauricio has a real natural bounce. I love watching that guy fight.
He did, I think, a brilliant job. And this is something even Mayweather would say, wow, this guy knew what he was doing. He took away Perez's right hand. He sensed when it was coming before Perez even threw it, saw it coming, tucked his chin in, rolled it with the front shoulder, and just absolutely made Perez think two or three times about throwing that punch, and then he started to counter him. And the thing that I loved about Mauricio Herrera, because Perez can bang a little bit. He has heavy hands. Herrera actually came out as the aggressor, controlled the center of the ring. Then he took it and almost did his version of James Toney, countering beautifully off the ropes. And then he tried to layer it by trying to finish him, and Perez, to his credit, was tough enough to withstand it. And I said to myself, Mauricio Herrera has grown so much. I mean, just think about it. Less than 2 years ago, he was getting beat by Kareem Mayfield. Now, that could be obviously an agony style where a guy just doesn't fit and he loses. But I think Mauricio Herrera, when you say who is a true contender at 140, I think El Maestro has to be given a lot of credit. Before we get to your calls, and again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's get to a couple of tweets. Here's one from Hail Hydra. Guys, on a scale of 1 to Rigo, how boring was Lara? Oh, jeez. Here's one from Joshua. Gabe, Canelo, Gennady Golovkin, possibility and thought, since Oscar De La Hoya brought this up at the press conference. That's just a lot of rhetoric, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Oscar learned that from Bob. Of you link your fighter to the very best in the sport as a way of like, kind of putting themselves in that class. I mean, you know, granted, now, you know, Golovkin hasn't exactly had the ultimate test yet, and he's, you know, he's the next guy. But I really tend to think his power is the goods. We're going to see it. Canelo, you know, he's been going around since he's a 154-pounder. I think he hits hard, but I don't think he's truly that dangerous, and he's really slow. I think that if he's having trouble sleeping, he should fight Triple G, because I think he'd go night-night about 7 or 8 rounds. But they're not going to do that. I mean, but they do have to make a decision. I mean, he's 155, and he's been that for a couple fights. But they're like, we're not a middleweight. We could go back to junior middleweight. I mean, if you didn't want a belt with Lara, then why are you still saying you're a junior middle? They're kind of staying in this nebulous safe land. I don't really – I mean, they can, I guess, because he's a pay-per-view guy. But it seems strange to me that they're not – they're middleweights, but not really.
Gabe, before we discuss Gennady Golovkin and big fights and what are the realistic possibilities, let's see, A, does he beat Daniel Gill? And B, almost as importantly, how well will he draw in the big room of the Garden? Because let's be honest, a lot of this is about marketability and viability from an economic standpoint, because it is all about risk and reward at this moment of boxing. Gaddy Fan and EA, they're asking about Canelo Cotto, who would be the network and who would have more leverage. Gabe, in a perfect world, which we certainly don't live in, shouldn't that really be the next fight for both men?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the biggest fight out there, you know. I mean, that always kind of changes. But, you know, Cotto brings an island in New York City. Canelo, I think his fans would travel. I wonder where it would be, but, I mean, would you do it in Texas? Would you do it in the Garden? Can you get it? How many people could you get, you know, in Texas? Dallas, you know, the Cowboys Stadium. To me, the economics of it are going to dictate the whole thing. And maybe they wait a fight. Maybe Canelo tries to pick up a belt. But, I mean, you know, if anybody is going to fit with his 155 catch weight, you know, division, it's Cotto for the middleweight title. So, I don't know. I think it's very logical. And I tweeted after the fight that there's no bigger fight to me. Just because you could take this fight in a lot of ways. You could take it to Vegas and kind of make that money. You could go and take a risk and put it in Yankee Stadium and really go for something gigantic, or Dodger Stadium, or, you know, or somewhere in Texas, like I said. It's a very big fight, and it's a logical fight. I think it's, at this moment, very winnable for both men. But
what I'm hearing
– your candidate as well.
What I'm hearing is that Canelo's next appearance, whether it's on Showtime or HBO or pay-per-view, it's going to happen sometime in November. And I hope it's on premium cable. Honestly, he's had 2 pay-per-view shows this year where I think basically they were glorified Showtime cards with a $60 price tag. As it relates to Cotto, there's a lot of talk of him fighting on December 13th. And when the name Tim Bradley, who's a 140-pounder, who's a very good fighter, but cannot punch his way out of a paper bag, relatively speaking, that means right there that Top Rank is already reaching for opponents. Gabe, here's one from Will Kane. Do you have an update for Keith Thurman? Gabe, here's a perfect example. And this past weekend in Vegas, I saw a lot of the Al Heyman clients who were going in for individual meetings about their next assignment. Gabe, I'll be honest with you. I have not heard anything in regards to One Time. And, in fact, I didn't even see him in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. And you would think that that guy – I was on a show last week out of Washington, and we were talking about who would I like to see Floyd fight, or at least a guy built towards that. And my answer is Keith Thurman. He's really exciting. He's a style matchup. He's a big dude with power, real power on both hands. But he can also be wobbled a bit and gotten to, which makes him even more exciting. He's kind of like a different version of a James Kirkland to me, just a go-for-broke, exciting dude. Where the hell is he? Maybe he's hanging out with James Kirkland. I don't know.
Yeah, in Bolivian. And, Gabe, here's the one that you'll find interesting. We love these linear championships. We care so much about it. Here's from Gaddy Fan. Where do you – Canelo all time as a 155-pound champion. Gabe, he has to be number one, right?
Oh, he's right. Well, no, Miguel Cotto, I believe, is because he clearly
right.
was inspired. So I think it's Miguel Cotto has the 155-pound pound for pound number one. Cotto's pound for Canelo's pound for pound number two.
If you want to call in, we'll go to the phone lines right now. 347-215-7598. Tell us, how did you score Canelo Lara? Gabe, let's get to the phone line.
In the 707, you're live on the next round. 707.
Hey.
Yes, who is this?
What's
hey,
up, Lord?
Hey, what's good? What's up? It's Carl.
Carl, oh my, Carl, you're early this week.
Man. Yeah, I
oh.
am, man.
Unlike Canelo, I like to mix it up a little bit.
Oh, whoa. Hey, come on. Carl, what can we do for you?
Man, I don't think I want to ever see Lara again, man.
Okay, no. Carl, with that being said, okay, that might be a universal opinion. Who did you have winning the fight, though?
Man, you know what? To be honest with you, man, I think Lara won the fight. I really think he won the fight. But that Martinez guy, I think his card was filled out before the fight. The judge, I didn't see 9-3. You know what I mean? That was just, I don't know about that one, man. But I thought Lara, I thought he won. I know I don't want to ever see him again. And, I don't think
Canelo, man, I don't think he's a pay-per-view star. I mean, pay-per-view, you know, back in the day, that was for super fights, man. I haven't seen not one super fight, man. You know what I mean? What I saw last
yeah.
week, that's I'll keep my money in my pocket, man. I know a lot of people, man, I mean, if this is what pay-per-view is going to,
nobody's
going to spend the money, man.
I used to be afraid of people on pay-per-view, you know, like Tommy Hearns, the way he looked at you know, Marvin Hagler, it was like, you know, what, on TV or Select TV or whatever, but that pay fight, that super fight, you know, those guys were bad, bad men. Somebody was going to sleep. Even like Trinidad and Vargas, it seemed like, you know, there was something dangerous about the fight. I didn't feel any danger in this fight.
Guys, last week I wrote an article for UCN Live, and the title was very simple, Too Many Pay-Per-Views. And
yeah.
nowadays it's more about contracts which will not be able to be met or adhered to at the HBO Showtime level. So now it becomes an economic issue. And also, why is Canelo on pay-per-view? Because he can. He has enough of a Mexican fan base that whether he faces Lara, who's certainly not a superstar, or Alfred Angulo, who's not, he could still turn a profit for the network, the promoters, and himself. But here's the bad part about it, and I pointed this out. When fights like that are now on pay-per-view and the subsequent undercard fighters, guess what? That lowers the bar of your premium cable subscription. So there are deep ripples that have an effect here or are caused when you lower the bar. And, Carl, I agree with you. There used to be a time, even if we were forking out our money, we were excited because you were watching a certain caliber of fighter and fight. What my biggest fear is, guys, they're turning into the UFC again, where it's almost a monthly grind of pay-per-views. And I don't know who has the disposable cash to all of a sudden say in the last couple of months, yes, I've spent an extra $325 to watch boxing.
Yeah, it's ugly. You know, the best two fights that I've seen this year was Areola and Stavern and Molina and Matisse, man. I mean, and you didn't have to pay for those, you know what I mean?
No, you didn't, and that is the issue. So is it safe to say, Carl, and again, we don't want to incriminate you, that you were listening on the radio this past weekend?
Yes, I was listening on the radio.
All right, hey, like Carmelo Anthony said, no snitching here, Carl.
Hey, how's that old saying go? It's nothing personal, it's just business. That's the way I looked at it, man.
All right, listen, Carl, we got to get running, okay?
All right, man, talk to you soon.
And I'd like to thank Carl from Oaktown. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. This is the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas, Steve Kim, Gabriel Montoya, hosting here for about another hour. Gabe, who's next on deck?
We go overseas, 011. You're live on the next round.
Yeah, hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Milcar speaking.
Milcar, have you finished your road work this week? Do you have enough time to speak to us and grace us with your presence?
I'm sorry about that. I just don't like getting knocked out, so I had to say something, and that's actually what I was doing. I pressed one later on in the evening, but you guys didn't bring me back on, so I'll just chime in today.
Milcar, the stage is yours.
All right, so you didn't answer that question about Rigo and the one to Rigo scale, so I'll answer it. I don't really think Rigo's boring, and I don't think you can really compare Lara to Rigo. If Rigo means, you know, shutting people out and knocking them out, then I give Erislandi Lara maybe a 2 or a 3 on that scale. But one thing I do think that they have in common is, like, the general challenge that a lot of these black Cuban fighters face, which is, number one, their training. I think that they're kind of, if you look at it this way, they're kind of trained as jazz musicians, and they're being asked to perform kind of rock music and being judged against rock musicians. You know, it doesn't matter how good a musician, let's say someone like Miles Davis is, if he's playing for an audience of Rolling Stones fans, you know, he's never going to win, and people aren't going to like what he has to do. You know,
it's a great analogy.
Professional boxing is not tennis, right? You don't get to select. You get to select your opponents, and winning isn't just all that matters. You got to do more than win. So I think that somebody really needs to get into these guys' ears and explain to them that it's not just about winning.
Amilcar, before you go on, I completely agree with your point. I said that before. Number one, Law is not as good as Rigo. He's not. Number two, though, to your bigger point, the Cuban amateur system, they are so programmed, so coached, so ingrained in that system. And I said this. It's not necessarily a knock, but it is the truth. I think Erislandi Lara boxed to win a gold medal or a trophy rather than a professional prize fight, knowing what was at stake in the politics of professional prize fighting. And that's one of the greatest flaws. They are coming from a very socialist or communist system. Now they get thrown into a system where they, you know, take great lengths to come to our country, where we have a system of capitalism, which is great, but capitalism has a downside. If nobody buys your product, this is the position you're then put in.
Yeah, I totally agree. You wanted to say something there, Gabe?
I kind of have Mara winning the fight, so I just...
Yeah, so did
me,
I.
You know,
sorry, I didn't say that.
It's to me, different philosophies, you know. I remember interviewing Rigo, and I asked him, you know, where do they start in Cuba, the hand to the feet? Because more often than not, I watch in gyms when kids are learning, and it's all about these, like, crazy long combinations, but it's all about punching. Even in, you know, in certain martial arts, it's kind of about punching. But the ones that appealed to me, and the Cuban style, his answer was they start from the feet up. You know, it's all about the vehicle that moves the arsenal around for them. And so if they can get one good shot in, and he would get, you know, there was a left hook that Canelo missed late in the fight, and it was followed by like it was more like a straight lead than a jab, where he turns that back shoulder and pops out his lead hand a little bit more, and he gets a little power on it, snapped Canelo's head back. Now, if that had been an Erislandi Lara fighting some guy fight, the announcers would have gone crazy, but instead they just kept talking about whatever they were talking about. They ignored it. That happened a lot in that fight, watching it on TV. When you watch it again on a telecast, I mean, and really watch it coldly, you know, like I watched it alone, like there was nobody around to, like, BS with or really be distracted by or anything. I just watched the fight with these cool new headphones I got, and you can really just see how clearly he's kind of clowning Canelo throughout the fight. Canelo doesn't even have the work rate that Angulo did. And again, like, I'm not big on show stats. I think they're not the whole picture. They're an indicator. But 107 to 97 was just a defensive fight, you know. But again, I think Steve's correct. You know, the professional level in capitalism is about entertainment. Is Tom Cruise ever going to win an Oscar for Best Actor? No. But has he sold, you know, $2 billion in movies because those movies are easily digestible and kind of fun? Yeah, and that's kind of Canelo, I guess, in this scenario.
Yeah, exactly. I think the other issue, too, is fan base. I mean, if he's in an arena that's filled with Mexicans who are really
yeah.
cheering on Canelo, I mean, there's no Cubans are going to go to the fight. Like, I watched the fight in Puerto Rico, and pretty much everyone where I was watching was going for Lara. But you guys had a caller a few weeks back who was asking, well, why can't, you know, Cubans support Cuban fighters in the United States? You really just have to look at kind of the history of the Cubans in the United States. I mean, the majority of them, especially in Florida, are, you know, white Cubans who fled the revolution and whose wealth was redistributed to blacks. These fighters are black. I mean, it's akin to, you know, white South Africans supporting a black South African fighter. It's just not going to happen. So there are so many disadvantages. Yep.
That point you made has been echoed to me by people in South Florida
yeah.
and in the boxing business who've tried to make that work. I remember Bob Arum saying, Steve, I don't think us gringos fully understand, but the reason why it's not as easy as taking Gamboa and Rigondeaux and everyone else to Miami is that there's a huge culture clash between the Bautista Cubans and the post-Castro Cubans. There's
exactly.
no doubt about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amilcar, anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, just before I go, I watched Lara Canelo, and then I watched the World Cup final, and we're just talking about kind of the business on pay-per-view and everything. I mean, Canelo-Lara was on pay-per-view at midnight. The World Cup final was on free TV at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really have to rethink where and how they're using the boxing platform if the sport is going to grow. I just wanted to end on
but
that.
But, Amilcar, remember this, though.
Yeah.
And I've always said this. When you say the boxing business is dead, I think it only applies to America, if that's even true at all.
Yeah, totally.
And again, I don't. But remember, in all these other countries, though, Amilcar,
yeah.
these broadcasts are actually usually on terrestrial television. But I agree. In terms of the biggest market, which is America, people have to understand the pay-per-view platform is the most lucrative, but it's also the smallest one you can perform on. And I think over the course of the last 30 years, Amilcar, that dynamic has absolutely eroded the pure fan base.
Couldn't agree more.
Amilcar, thank you for the call. Join us again next week. Get your road work in early, okay? 347-215-7598. If you want to talk boxing, give us your scorecard for Canelo Alvarez Arizlande Lara. Gabe, who's next?
In the 787, you've been on the longest. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. Who is this?
Good, hey.
Christian from Tampa, Florida.
Christian, home of the Buccaneers. Welcome to the next round.
You know how it is. Thank you, guys. I just have a quick question. I was just wondering if just Canelo has just hit his actual boxing ceiling, because I heard a lot of talk before the fight how after the Mayweather fight they had learned so much. But looking at the fight on Saturday, I didn't really see any changes from the Mayweather fight to the Lara fight. It just seemed like Canelo wasn't able to adapt what was going on inside the ring. So my question is it something that maybe is it the Reynosos are unable to come up with a game plan to defeat these style of fighters? Or is it that Canelo is unable to go ahead and take that game plan that's being built for him and actually take it inside the ring and do it? So,
Gabe, here's a tweet from from Boxing Jungle, and you've kind of spoken about this, Gabe. Should Canelo find a new trainer?
You know, You look at the way Angulo was able to be successful against Lara. He used smaller steps, stayed low to the ground, same kind of shell defense. I think Canelo's learned how to move his upper body. I don't know. It depends on what their overall plan is and how far he's come, in their opinion. I think I've been watching him since he's like 18, 17. He hasn't changed all that much. He's gotten more experience, a little more fluid, grown into his man strength. But one, I think his camps are not fat farms so much as they're just trying to get him down to 155. I think they're worrying about that more than they are about developing new tactics. He looks like a guy that's just not firing on all cylinders. Like, he's conserving energy. He'd have, like, the 12th. He had a big opening, and you could see that he wanted to go for it, and then he just gassed out. And a lot of those rounds were like that, where he looked good early on, and then it would just be a slow cruise back to a Lara round. I think he's got a problem there. Trainer-wise, though, I wondered who would do best for him. It would have Clemente Medina, because like, he's already got kind of refined boxing skills, but now maybe he needs somebody to bring the dog out of him and to make him more aggressive and go for broke. I don't know if Robert Garcia is that guy. Maybe Freddie Roach, somebody he's got to respect, and somebody that's bigger than him, that has enough experience, and that can kind of change his stripes. Maybe an Ann Wolf, you know, who knows? But I don't think he would, you know, would survive that. But somebody that's going to make him more aggressive and stop thinking so much. But I agree with you in terms of his physical skills. I think he's hit his ceiling.
Yeah, and the reason I was asking that is just you know, as a fellow Puerto Rican, when Cotto left his uncle, there was a few fights in there that I just thought that, you know, Cotto was just doing his own training. So I was thinking that maybe Canelo is somebody that's already, you know, over the Reynosos or what they can teach him, and that he's just running his own camp, and he could come into the situation, what happened to Cotto, where he changed his whole style around.
Well, Christian, to your point, when Miguel Cotto had that guy Joe Santiago, basically, Cotto was training himself. I don't think there's any debate about that. Secondly, and this is something that Teddy Atlas says a lot and I think is absolutely true, no matter who your corner is, no matter what you say in terms of pre-fight statements, a fighter's temperament will override any trainer. And if Gabe is correct, and this guy is just a counterpuncher at heart, Gabe, again, I don't know if any trainer is going to necessarily make him into a young, bigger version of Julio Cesar Chavez Sr.
Yeah, maybe Sanchez would be an interesting choice with him. He's got a, you know, kind of a cerebral banger in Triple G, and that's kind of what Canelo is on some level. I think maybe just going full 160, just diving in and letting him see what replenishing his body a little bit, what that could do for him. Maybe this is his only gear, but I suspect really just kind of letting the air out of the tires a little bit will do him some good.
Christian, how did you score Canelo Lara?
I had it 114-114.
Okay. Well, you know what? A lot of people would argue neither guy deserved to win that fight. That is not the worst call in the world. Christian, we got to get running, okay?
I appreciate it, guys.
We have an open phone line, 347-215-7598. In a few minutes, we'll go through some news and notes on the next round. Gabe, who's next?
In the 516, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Who is this?
What's up, man?
Evan from Pennsylvania. Hey, guys. I'm doing good. First off, my scorecard for Canelo Lara. I didn't score because I didn't watch the fight. I was watching on the radio, and after the Herrera fight, I got a text from my friend. Said, "Hey, do you want to go out?" And then I said to myself, "Well, do I really want to sit through a Canelo Lara fight?" And it turned out I was right. I followed it on Twitter all night. I was planning on watching it today for the express purpose of scoring it, and I still haven't brought myself to do it yet, and I don't know if I will based on what I've been hearing.
You know what it's like? It's like seeing this movie with these two big stars, and you're thinking, ooh, these guys are really good actors. And then the reviews come out, and they're just terrible, and they win like a Razzie. And you just say to yourself, yeah, I may not even get this out when it's on Blu-ray.
It's sort of like, I know, it's like a Showtime, that De Niro, Eddie Murphy movie. Although
yeah.
I don't know, I don't think anybody would compare Lara and Canelo to the Eddie Murphy and De Niro of boxing. But anyway, I had another. My point was, I was watching the Tyson Fury Derek Chisora press conference today, and Fury was just over the top, being himself. It really got me pumped for the fight, and I think sort of what American boxing is missing in a sense is, again, you got, these are two British guys. It's sort of a local sort of thing, and you got two big personalities. And as a fan, I like that sort of thing. And I feel like a lot of American boxers don't understand that. And for whatever reason, you know, the one guy that seems to resonate with the public is Floyd Mayweather's act. But when, you know, with Chisora and Fury, they're putting on an act. I think, you know, I think Fury is sort of playing a part of sort of the big ogre, and it's paid off for him. And I just wanted to know what your thoughts on Tyson Fury, Chisora, just thoughts on the fight and the rematch, and sort of what they're selling to the public.
I think that is going to be a very fun fight in Manchester. And, Gabe, this is the type of fight, I think if HBO or Showtime had any imagination, I would have found a way to buy the rights to this fight. You eventually, as the Klitschkos leave, the last one, exit stage left, you're going to be in the heavyweight business. Chisora Fury is a grudge match. It could be a lot of fun. You got two outsized personalities. And quite frankly, I'd much rather watch this than Zhao Xiuming. I would have found a way to try to include this in some sort of tape delay package. But again, I'm not that high on the pay scale. But Gabe, it points out the difference, and this goes back to Milcar's call. Chisora Fury, we don't pay any attention to it, really, the general media. But over there in England, this is going to be a sizable event.
Yeah, we don't really have events quite like this. I mean, it's the big man should always be featured, and good storyline, good character should always be featured, especially when that character translates over into fun fights. And that's, I think, true for both these guys. The first fight set off a real long string of bad luck for Chisora, a bunch of losses, but he's righted the ship, and he's looked better and in better shape every fight. He's kind of got his diet under control. And they always say heavyweights mature later, and you know, maybe that's just because men mature a little bit later, and it takes a while to understand your mortality. You hit 30, you start to realize, you know, that the end is kind of near. Even I feel bad, like Areola kind of figured that out, but I think he figured it out way too late. For Chisora, I think, you know, he's getting a Fury at the right time. I don't think Tyson's fully formed. That always hit his ceiling. I can't tell which, but it's going to be a fun fight regardless, man. I can't wait. I don't know who I'm picking.
I'm going to go with Chisora. I think he's got momentum. I think he's been a little bit steadier. And this is a guy that went very tough rounds and actually had a good second half of the fight against Vitaly Klitschko. And Tyson Fury, in many ways, is built like Klitschko, but I don't think he's the athlete. So I think this is when the Tyson Fury O goes. Give me Derek Chisora, Gabe.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll make a pick at some point, but, you know, just not yet. I still got time. I kind of lean toward Chisora, just I like the style, but it depends on what type of Tyson Fury shows up, the kind of shape that he's in. You know, can he establish the jab early, and can he keep it going? Chisora's been, just like you said, on a roll, and he really turns forward, digs to that body, and he's just relentless. He's not a big hitter in terms of one-punch knockout power, but he can grind you down, and that's going to be his best chance. I can't wait for the fight.
Caller, is there anything else we can do for you?
That's it, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. We'll take one more caller before we get to news and notes. Here's a tweet from SmokingBandit82. Hey, Steve, listening live. Quick question. Any updates in John Molina Jr. and his next bout? Gabe, here's what's interesting. Johnny Molina is one of the guys I saw in Vegas who was beckoned by Mr. Heyman. And I just found it interesting. I asked him on Saturday before the fight card, what do you know? And he said, Steve, we're working on things. I can't tell you. But the thing that got me was not that he didn't have an answer, but isn't this what Al Heyman's doing, becoming a lot like Dana White in the UFC, that Al Heyman's not so much your manager dealing with the promoter looking for the best deals. He's doling out assignments like Dana White, isn't he? Am I wrong in that?
No. I think it's, you know, it's much easier to control the thing when you're just kind of, you know, the only guy calling the shots. And for whatever reason, whether he just overpays dudes, you know, he's kind of like the Kaiser Soze, you always make like five times more than the job is worth or something, guys go along with it. And, you know, I mean, it's against the Ali Act if that's what's really going on, that you've got, and everybody in collusion with him is breaking the law. If he's just allowing you to be the one-stop shop. And, you know, just personally, like watching like people have talked about, like Sean Porter, and testing and all that recently. And one of the reasons it didn't happen for like the last fight was because of this. Like this, nobody knew what they were getting paid until deep into the process. They barely knew that they were actually fighting Paulie. I think 4 weeks out from the fight, something like that. He'd already been training. So it's an unusual problem, but I guess if you have everybody on their toes, I mean, it's another way to stay in charge.
Gabe, the August 16th show was announced for the StubHub Center that involves the man you just brought up, Sean Porter against Kell Brook, Bika against Durrell, and Omar Figueroa. Gabe, we are 5 weeks from that event. So it is interesting. If you, quote-unquote, are advised by Al Haymon, be ready because you're right. You're not going to know 8 to 10 weeks out. You're probably going to have a much quicker time or an accelerated pace where he says, hey, this is when you're going. Be ready or I'll just get someone else. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the line?
804, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on? Good evening, guys. What's going on?
Good. Who is this?
My name is Ben, and I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia.
Ben, the land of the Cavaliers, yeah. I think. And welcome aboard to the next round.
thanks, guys. First of all, I had Canelo winning 7-5. Also, It was a dud. I had a fight party where I invited coworkers and their lovely wives and girlfriends. And the disappointing part was that, a couple of them knew who Canelo was because of the Mayweather fight. But I did record the two all-access shows, leading up to the fight. And the majority of the people were going for Lara until Lara showed up. And I'm going to say about the second round, they're already through with them. It wasn't a good look for boxing. I think people are going to be like, hey, Ben, why don't you just meet us at the bar after the fight, for the next one. So, thank you, Lara. I had a couple of questions. The first one was, did y'all see how Hopkins was talking to Jim Gray in the interview during the fight? It seemed like he kept bringing up Kovalev, and it kind of looked funny because it seemed like Jim kept trying to push Adonis Stevenson's name in there. And because, he had a question where, would you fight in Toronto? And then, Hopkins said, well, I'll even look in Atlantic City, which is the known place for Kovalev to fight.
Ben, that's a very interesting question. Now, I was at the fight, so I couldn't see the broadcast. But I think there's a little bit smoke than I even anticipated. I thought when Hopkins started bringing up Kovalev, I thought that's the same hustle that he was doing last year. Bring up a guy that you can't fight after he signs the fight cleverly on the opposite network. There seems to be a little bit of talk that maybe you could do something. Gabe, does this maybe point to the fact that Kathy Zduva lawsuit has some sort of traction?
Actually, that's one scenario. That's a possibility. Here's another one. If you fight Adonis Stevenson, you have to, as his last three opponents, I believe, had to agree to a very high-level random anti-doping program.
Oh, someone tell Paulie Malignaggi, Gabe. Alert Paulie Malignaggi immediately. He's the police here now in the PEDs. He's taking your spot, Gabe.
I'm not Paulie Malignaggi, but I have been known to throw a little shade in my time. And I just want to say that's something that you should look at. Kovalev, while New Jersey does claim to have a really high-level testing program, they don't really target tests that I have recalled, similar to how Nevada is doing. If you're trying to do a fight or get a license there, you're subject to some pretty scary tests at this point, catching two guys for EPO, which is the first in combat sports. So I know that New Jersey is capable of it, but I don't know if they actually do test for EPO. That's a little bit safer ground. I'm not saying anything, but I'm just saying he will at least have, within like a month period, I think, two random anti-doping tests, including ones on the night of the fight. If he's fighting Stevenson, he probably won't have that if he's fighting Kovalev. So that's just one more fact.
Very interesting, Gabe. That's something for Paulie Malignaggi to bring up on Twitter by tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ben, anything else we can do for you?
There's one more thing. It's not really a question. It's more like a plea for Gabriel to somehow get in touch with Ann Wolf and please try to get Kirkland that fight in the fall for with Canelo. I'm a big James Kirkland fan. I'm originally from Austin. You know, I just want him.
Oh, wow.
I just want to see him in that one big fight. You know, I just want to see him in that one big fight. And
me too. Me too.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, you know, somehow, some way they can make a fight in November. And I don't care if it's pay-per-view. I know it sucks. I you know, I'm a junkie. I bought every single pay-per-view. I even bought the Mayweather-Madonna one, which I said I wasn't, but at the last minute, you know, I just had to watch it. And
man, you're like Pookie in New Jack City. At the end of the day,
yeah,
you're
exactly,
fanatic,
exactly. It's a shame because, you know, I'm
just
doing all this money. It's not just my cable bill is big. It's just that, you know, compound that with the pay-per-views. I mean, it's just it's crazy. I got to work harder, I guess, you know. And but yeah, I just really want to see the James Kirkland fight. You know, I don't care if he gets knocked down in the first round, but I have a feeling it's gonna be an epic fight. I have a feeling he was gonna come out at the end. I really do.
I wish
anyway,
he was more active. You know, I wish that he was more well oiled for it. But he said, that's the thing he said after the last fight was Canelo. They wanted Canelo.
Yep.
So maybe he's been hiding out this whole time. He did stay in shape before he got picked up as a free agent and looked great against Glenn Tapia. So maybe he waited and was smart to kind of heal back up and get ready for what Ann's going to do to him and then prepare himself to really throw himself against the wall with Canelo. You got to go all in, I think, to take the kid out. God, I'd love to
see
that fight.
That's James. You just described James. He will go all out. You know, Canelo will have to earn that. You know, he's going to have to earn that victory. So, but anyways, guys, thank you for the show. And I'll just stay online just to keep listening to the rest of it.
Ben.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call, but Gabe, remember this. I don't want to call Kirkland the Mandinga who cried wolf, but I think 2 years ago, couldn't he have made a career-high payday for facing Canelo on that September weekend where he ended up facing Jose Cito Lopez?
Yeah, oh yeah. But, you know, he did talk about the shoulder. I don't know how bad it was. It was more like pay me for the shoulder. I don't even know what the status of the shoulder is now, to be honest. Like, you know, I talked to Ann more than I talked to James, you know, and so I don't, yeah, I mean, he had his shot, but, you know, things come back around again. You know, I think the way people hoped was that Angulo and Kirkland would be kind of funneled towards Canelo by now, and, you know, before they were, you know, but things are, just, you know, funny. Timing is everything in boxing. The layoff is what bothers me, but I also think this part of why James kind of goes away. It's what Ann does to him in that camp. And I think as he's gotten older and the stakes have gotten higher, I think it's gotten harder and harder for him to do it. I mean, that's just a theory, but.
Gabe, let's go through some news and notes on the next round. We'll get back to your calls. We have open phone lines, 347-215-7598, the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. Gabe, September 13th, Floyd Mayweather in the rematch against Marcos Maidana from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. You got to love it. Floyd Mayweather and Leonard Ellerbe both stated, we're never, ever, ever, ever working with Golden Boy without Richard Schaefer till September.
I just think you should just slow down before you make definitive statements, you know? Looking around, I really think that they kind of reminded me of Miriam 50 Cent started talking all that mess to Oscar De La Hoya, calling him baby girl. And then now he's just kind of like cannon fodder for the big boys, you know? It's like, dude, you know, this is, you know, it's the rap game or whatever you do, vitamin water might be your territory, but boxing is where Oscar De La Hoya was, you know, trialed by fire, like raised up. So I think this is another one of those situations. I just think it's just pretty funny to me.
Gabe, Manny Pacquiao, Chris Algieri was scheduled to go November 22nd, November 23rd in Asia, in Macau.
Mm.
Last week I was told this deal, we are rounding third, coming to home. They're waving him in, no need to even slide. And then today there are reports, mainly from Mitch Abrams, some very solid reporter with Newsday, basically saying Chris Algieri is looking at that $1.5 million plus pay-per-view upside thing. Wait a minute, this is not kosher. Now, Gabe, here's the way I look at it. There was a period of time when every Margarito, every Tim Bradley, every Shane Mosley certainly, every Miguel Cotto, every Brandon Rios was getting in excess of $3, $4, and $5 million to be a dance partner for the Pac-Man. But, Gabe, I think there's a new normal. I think there's a new economic reality. Number one, pay-per-views in Asia, they are going to have a dip. You're going to lose about 40% of your audience. And overall, the Manny Pacquiao numbers have gone down. Gabe, does Chris Algieri need to come to his senses and realize this is no longer 2010 for Manny Pacquiao?
Well, I think he has to realize that, and he has to realize where he's at. I mean, he's on the victory tour right now. You know, he's elated. Everybody loves him. He's realized his dream, you know, and he's a two-sport champion, which is a pretty rare thing. But still, you know, what are you really bringing in the marketplace? I honestly kind of wonder, you know, let's say he gets the Pacquiao fight. Is that those episodes of 24/7, are those equal to a couple fights for him on HBO in terms of exposure and you know, maybe even getting women involved in terms of buying the pay-per-view? The women have a big say over the entertainment dollar in a household. And, you know, that's a good-looking dude. He looks like the guy on Fast and Furious. You could sell that guy. I wonder if that will be equal to it. But still, just going back to the original point of his salary, he's got to realize that he's not at that point yet. Maybe he can ask for more in the next fight, but he's still paying his dues. I mean, Provodnikov wasn't exactly a household name himself, you know? So I think the 1.5 with the upside is what he should take and just do it.
It's almost unprecedented for a fighter to make one appearance on HBO, then all of a sudden headline or co-headline a show of this caliber. Secondly, yeah. I believe for Provodnikov, he made a career-high $100,000. So he's literally getting, what, 15 times that amount. And I know people are going to argue, well, wait a minute. Manny Pacquiao is making $20 million. Well, Gabe, let's be honest about it. Aren't really 98% of those pay-per-view buys, whatever they are, whether it's a half million or $3 million, it really is about Manny Pacquiao. I think that is the reality.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But, you know, to me, the extra numbers in the pay-per-view are going to be the casual fan. And who's the casual fan? Is that a Mexican dude in Oxnard? No, it's probably going to be just like a boxing fan. To me, it's going to be like John, you know, a white guy that watches cable and gets interested in a storyline and wants to follow it enough to pay some money for it. So I wonder, you know, Algieri is very, very marketable. But still, again, I think no matter how marketable he is, it's not going to equal like 300, you know, 1,000 pay-per-views. You know, I don't know. Like you said, I think 2% to the 3% is really what he's going to bring. Everything else is Manny. You know, and there's different versions of it. Can you see the guy to knock him out, or is it the guy to take the mantle over? But even again, I think that's just way too soon. Right now, he's just trying to climb a mountaintop. Take the deal, dude. Win the fight, and then, you know, get a lot more in the rematch.
I was told by Artie Palullo, who was in L.A. last week, the fight is at 144 pounds, because, Gabe, you just love those catch weights, right? So he'll get to keep his WBO 140-pound title, which means even if he loses to Manny Pacquiao, he has the rematch with Provodnikov in his back pocket. Now, if somehow Algieri bows out of this and he can make whatever decision he wants, there's a specter that he's going to take less than half that to face Provodnikov again. Personally, if that is the scenario that's set up, I'm getting my passport punched, and I'm going to Macau, whether you like that deal or not, because quite frankly, there is no other deal. Gabe, September 6th, Showtime, looks like they will be doing a triple header featuring Adrian Broner, Lucas Matisse, and Andre Berto. Gabe, all three have an association with Al Haymon. I hope not, but do you get the sinking suspicion or feeling that these will be more Al Haymon showcase fights on Showtime?
Yeah, that's the problem with the pay-per-views, man, is, yeah, you don't have these names to sprinkle throughout. I was kind of thinking about it during the show earlier, that think about the way Chavez Jr. was developed, that Bob was like, look, I know this guy has no amateur career. He's not that great right now. He's going to make for some interesting fights because he's learning in the ring. And so they were like cheaper pay-per-views that had some good fights surrounding it, not the greatest, but, you know, good solid action. And it was like 20-something bucks. Would fans be happy if we went to a model where we developed fighters like that and then we saved the good fights for cable? I certainly would be into that.
Absolutely. Listen, Stephen Espinosa told me on Friday in an interview that you can watch on UCN Live that you're going to be happy with the Lucas Matisse dance partner. I'm being told it is not Michael Perez out of Puerto Rico, because that's just cannon fodder. Adrian Broner, to me, I think is getting the kid gloves treatment from being with Al Haymon. Listen, John Molina would take that fight. Not today. He would have taken it yesterday. As for Andre Berto, that guy is so flawed. You could put him in with anybody. He might get beat, so they get a pass on that, as far as I'm concerned. In terms of the venue, I'm hearing the AT&T Center, home of the world champion San Antonio Spurs, and of course, I'm a longtime diehard San Antonio Spurs fan. That might be the host of the event. Gabe, what did you think of Turiano Johnson coming off his loss to Curtis Stevens against Mike Gavronsky, winning a 10-round decision?
I thought it was a good fight for him. You know, he didn't look tentative to me. He was workmanlike. It was a solid performance. You know, I just think there's still kind of rough edges. I just wonder about a guy that just wasn't fully developed, you know. He's 30, but he doesn't have that many fights. And so I wonder how high his ceiling is, you know. I think they should just keep him fighting as often as he can, as often as he's able to, and try to make a run at things. I mean, I think he's a solid guy. And I think, you know, with the right matchmaking, he could be polished into something.
Yeah, first of all, I hope he just keeps fighting. And I just want to say one thing. He's a personable, engaging guy. I really wish him well because he's willing to fight. I mean, here's a guy that could have bitch moaned and screamed and said, unless you get me another quote-unquote bigger fight, I'm not going out there. Here's a guy that if you said, we'll fight you every 3-4 months on smaller platforms, I get the sense he's smart enough to actually understand the big picture. Gabe, the IBF Super Featherweight title was in Miami. Rancis Bartholomew takes on Arjenis Mendez. And Gabe, I don't know if you saw this card. If you didn't, you lucked out. This was one of the most bizarre telecasts I've ever seen. It had Jeff Lacy, it had Edison Miranda. The only thing missing were Kelly Pavlik and Jermaine Taylor. And then before the main event, they ended up showing like 30 minutes of a fight that took place a couple hours before. The main event didn't start till almost 11 o'clock at night. What a strange broadcast on Fox Sports 1.
It really was. It was like somebody was just hammered and making decisions, you know, like at every level, you know, like this is still, what's Jeff Lacy doing? Let's get it. And then Jeff Lacy later claims that the guy that weighed in with him is not the guy that got in the ring with him, just to make things even stranger. Hopefully that's just not something that he can hang his hat on and get another fight because he looked pretty bad. The whole card, like, I couldn't tell if Tyson was like, what are the commentators? We were just kind of hanging out nearby, a microphone. At times, it was like you said, it was a very strange broadcast. I hope they do it again. You know, do it on a Friday so I can justify having a beer. You know,
I'll say this about Mike. I just love how Colonel Bob was trying to like guide him to say, yeah, you know, Mendez is making a fight of this, and Mike was like, no, not really. My guy kind of sucks tonight.
Really?
Boy, he really is bad.
I think he's like, you know, inherited, you know, goods, you know, the Tyson came into the, you know, Equiniti Sports, I think it was, and put his name, and now it's Mike Tyson Promotions. And I think there's just certain guys, you know, Mendez was one of their assets, had a belt, but was kind of a man without a weight class. I don't know why they went right back to this fight. I know the first fight that you know, how it ended is why, but he was having a lot of trouble making weight, and I don't think there was any reason to think he would have any trouble, you know, or wouldn't have the same trouble this fight. I think Memo Heredia was working with him this fight, and he looked okay. He didn't get, you know, knocked out or anything, but, I mean, it was just what an awful fight. I just never want to see that matchup ever again.
Yeah, it's one of those fights the old-timers would say, let him in for free, charge him to leave. 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
In the 760, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what up, guys? It's Julio from San Diego. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, man, I'm chilling. First of all, I had a 7.5 Laura. I watched it in the movie theaters. It was a okay fight or whatever. I'm not really going crazy like a lot of people are. I think Laura could have been more active, but it is what it is. But anyway, I had two questions. First of all, you guys said that Algeria prices itself out for pets. And I read on Boxing Scene that Pacquiao's other two options are Abreu and Alvarado. So I was wondering what you guys really think is going to end up for Pac.
First of all, if that's true, and I'm not saying it's not, Gabe, you know what? Even though he lost his last fight, if those are my other two options, do you know who I go back to? Provodnikov.
Yeah, I think, you know, Provodnikov is a guy that you know, you can get well with. I mean, it's dangerous, I'm just kind of looking at the whole thing with Algieri as well. I mean, do you just turn the trick again and beat Algieri beat Provodnikov again? It's going to be an exciting fight, and you solidify that fight and that win. Are you worth more at that point, and will Pacquiao still be there? Who needs who more in this? I mean, who's Pacquiao's option if he doesn't have Algieri?
Yeah, this is where, for all the talk that the Cold War is thawing, we are not at the stage where we bring in David Hasselhoff to do a concert on top of the Berlin Wall, because I would much rather see Manny Pacquiao against the likes of a Marcos Maidana, who obviously has an appointment, or a Lucas Matisse, or some of the other guys that are on the other side of the street with Oscar De La Hoya.
Thank you. I've been saying that. I keep seeing these guys preach about how they worked everything out, but it's been a while now. We still haven't seen anything between the two promoters. But anyway, my second question is: you guys have any thoughts on Amir Khan's opponent later this year?
Gabe,
there's another short notice. You know, who knows? I'm not really sure where Amir stands, but it's another. You know, ask Al Heyman. You know, it's. Or Dana White, you know, I'm not sure. That's a good question. And he's not really. I know he's staying with Virgil Hunter. You know, we're not staying with him right now, but training with him. But he was going to be working with like the snack team, and that's kind of where I was having a lot of my access. But he's not doing that anymore. So I'm not as soon as they left town. Like I haven't really heard from them. So I don't know. I'll find out. But as of yet, there's no plans.
All right, guys. Appreciate it, guys. Take it easy.
All right. Thank you very much. Gabe, here's a disturbing tweet from Ryan Scalia. Regarding this Miguel Vasquez-Mickey Bay fight, and he puts in parentheses, shit, any idea of where, what channel it's on? Possibly the start of Heyman on NBC Sports Network. Gabe, let me just say one thing. If they're going to make Vasquez-Mickey Bay, the appropriate channel would be C-SPAN.
Yeah, good Lord. Yeah, C-SPAN thinks this is too boring. You know? Good Lord. I'd rather watch Lara fight himself. I don't understand. What is, you know, I guess it's just politics. I do understand how Mickey Bay gets into this position. But, you know, it is what it is. It's why you sign everybody, and then you just have them fight each other. That's going to be the interesting factor that we haven't really seen. We've seen a little bit of it, I guess, like kind of the shadow effects of it. But Al Heyman and the sanctioning bodies. And if a guy owns all the talent, but, he, you know, I mean, from, like we said, like guys that nobody's even thinking of signing, he gets. You start to own a whole division. How are the sanctioning bodies going to react to that when he just starts calling the shots with them? Everybody else has gotten in line. So it's going to be interesting.
DJ Macadocious, Steve, has Austin Trout fell out of favor with Al Heyman? Why is he fighting on ESPN? Gabe, I think it's very simple. There's a finite amount of dates, but over 100 fighters in that stable. Not everyone is going to get that Andre Berto treatment.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's like you got to win some fights and look good doing it and be exciting to get those top marquee things. I mean, I feel bad for him, but, I mean, that's just kind of the way it goes. That's the trajectory. Keep winning. Look good.
347-215-7598. We have about 15 minutes left on the clock here on the next round. Steve Kim, Gable Montoya on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
In the 951, you're live on the next round. 951?
Oh, boom. Our first knockdown. Oh, we were so close, Gabe, to making the distance. We really were.
It's terrible. In the 415, you're live on the next round.
Hey, yo, what's up, Gabe? What's up, Steve?
Good, what's going on?
What's up, man? It's Marlon from San Francisco.
Marlon, welcome to the next round.
Hey, first off, man, please don't make that Pacquiao-Algieri fight. I kind of hope he does drop out.
You know what's funny, Marlon? When I tweeted that about 2 hours ago, I phrased it a little bit harshly, but I remember when this fight first came up, there was not a great yearning or a public demand, and I think that's another thing Algeria needs to realize. It's not as if you're taking away a fight that guys like Marlon, Gabe, are yearning to see.
Yeah, I'll accept it. But, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the first on everybody's list. Just, like, take the deal.
No, it's like this, man. It's like, I think you guys kind of touched on it. It's like this. Like, those guys that you named before that he fought 2010 or whatever, like, at least those guys had at least more of a name. You like Shane Mosley, Hall of Famer, Cotto, Hall of Famer, Margarito, people knew him. Like, this dude got one fight that he may or may not have won, depending how you look at it, and not the most, I don't know, fan-friendly guy. Like, I don't know, man. Like,
well,
and
Marlon, here's another issue. I know people keep bringing up the phrase, he's marketable. Okay, that's coded phrase for white guy.
Yes.
But at the same time,
exactly.
If a white guy has not been exposed, he's still basically an anonymous white guy.
Exactly.
Well, like, I mean, he could be a perfectly good white man. But, you know, and I was perfectly, I was straight up front about it, you know, that he's a white guy. And I think that there's a market for you know, the white dollar is out there. And I think the UFC proves that. So, you know, I don't think that's something you can just throw out that, it's true.
Yeah.
Marlon, how did you have Canelo Lara scored?
Canelo Lara, man. Hey, I'm going to tell you, I actually had $200 on Lara, man, but I think he lost. And I was whipped by $200. He was like, he was plus 210. So I took a chance, but you got to show the man. I didn't realize it until I kind of realized it in the Angulo fight a little bit, but he's really, like, as people much want to make him like a Rigo or a Floyd, like, no, he's not. He's real limited. He's like 1-2 every time. Jab, left hand. If that don't work, I'm running. Like, I don't know, and I think after the fourth round, I think Canelo hit him with something, man, that really put him on his bike. A couple body shots, I think it was, and, like, it was over. He had no interest in engaging after that. And this is coming from a guy that had $200 on him, you know, like, that, you know, took a chance on him. Because I thought Canelo, man, and I know.
Well, Marlon, where did you watch the fight? Did you buy the pay-per-view or did you, listen on the radio?
Oh, absolutely not. I listened on the radio.
Hey, we won't say anything if you don't.
Absolutely not. But, yeah, I think if you watch this fight again today, man, you're going to kick yourself because it was there for the taking.
Mm.
It was there for the taking, but I really think Canelo's a strong dude, man. He got to be coming in there probably like 170, and he got some zip on his punches, and I think Canelo kind of, like, changed his mind. Like, he had some ideas, and Canelo kind of changed his mind, and then that's you saw what we saw after that.
Marlon,
really
I made this point earlier. There are some people that say the body shots didn't affect him. I've stood up for Marlon and said
this guy
is not as much a mover as people want to think. I've never seen him move like that before to that degree.
Exactly.
I think the body shots did have some sort of effect.
Exactly. And then at that point, it's up to him. Like a lot of other people were saying, you got to kind of take a chance after that, you know, and he didn't really want to take that chance. A lot of people say the same thing about, you know, Canelo gets a bad rap, man. Canelo can fucking fight, man. Like, I know the red hair.
Yeah, Gabe. Listen to this white man.
Yeah,
Gee.
Gabe.
She landed nine jabs out of 183.
Hey, it's hard to land when the dude is on the
What do you mean
cycle.
He could fight?
It's hard to land when the dude is, like, he had no intention.
The jab is the weapon that's closest to the opponent, and he landed it nine
man.
Times.
Well, he could have threw more jabs. He wasn't throwing shit.
If he was a better boxer, he
would have
thought to adjust and do that, but he's not.
No, that's true. It takes two. A lot of people say that, like, when it comes to, like, like I said, I'm not really comparing him because he's no way as good. A lot of people compare, like, that to, like, a Floyd or a Rigo. But they say, oh, they're running, which I don't think neither one of them guys run as much as Laura ran in this particular fight. But they do things that make dudes really not want to take that chance.
Yeah,
but there was, you
see,
know,
Rigo
talk
hit you
about
with that left
how many
hand.
Times did
he hit you with that left hand, and it's like that back the fuck up left hand, and dudes don't want to come in there no more. Floyd does the same thing.
I don't like the guy for not having, like, knockout power. I mean, how many times Lara would be underneath him and behind him, and dude would be like, where the hell did he go? I mean, you could do a whole
Lara would do that and spin off, though. Why wouldn't he make him pay after
those defense
is
one of the four criteria.
But, Gabe, is it really one? Who really scores defense?
I don't want to watch the 2012 Athens Olympics though either, man. It's pro boxing, man.
Gabe,
I'm keeping 100.
Marlon, if Gabe, is defense really one of the four criteria anymore in modern boxing?
Yeah,
I know theoretically is it? Oh, I disagree with that.
It's not. It is, but it's not. If that makes any sense,
it is, but it's not just that way. All right, guys.
It's about following the money, but until somebody actually changes the rules and removes that as a criteria, it's a criteria.
Yeah.
All right, well, guys, we can go back and forth on this a million. Marlon, give us a call next week, why don't you?
Hey, man, I love you guys.
Great call, then.
Yes, great call. Yeah, and I guess the best way to really summarize Lara Canelo, in my view, Gabe, is one guy couldn't, the other guy wouldn't. I think that's the fairest summation of it all.
Yeah.
So before we go back to the lines, I find it, I don't want to say insulting or interesting or ironic, but I think it is apropos that Guillermo Rigondeaux, in his last fight under this top rank contract, is not only exiled to the leper colony of top rank, which is Macau, right?
Yeah.
He's not even on HBO 2. He's on Solo Boxeo Una Mas. That about says it all about this relationship, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like, kind of apropos, it's the word, one fight left, go to Uno Mas, peace. I feel bad. I mean, I think it's, you know, it was something that you talked about a few weeks ago, that you know, the top rank felt like they were kind of pushed into getting Rigo. They did. And then once they had him, it was like, God, we've got Rigo. This sucks. And it's been that way ever since. And he took away their mirage, known as Menino Donaire, you know, and really just undressed the guy. A great performance, and they haven't figured out what to do with him ever since. Like, how about have him face the guy as he said to Nonito? I bet you Rigo would knock them out. But instead, he gets penalized for that fight going the distance. I don't think it's right, but it is what it is. You know, you are worth what the market will bear, and I guess they can't bear Rigo.
And, Gabe, I've talked to a couple of sources. In fairness to top rank, number one, it's a network decision. And number two, they are paying him his contracted minimum, which is right around the area of $500,000. So we don't have to throw him a benefit anytime soon. And, Gabe, this is in your area, and this is going to be the start of a series. It'll eventually move to the Armory. But boxing is back in your city of San Francisco, Mercito Hesta versus Luis Arceo. Gabe, it's going to be very interesting to see how this program is developed over time.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. You know, the Bay Area is dying to have fights. Gyms here, you know, they have solid workmanlike fighters. There's some guys that are starting to stand out a little bit. Bruno Escalante, I know, he injured his hand in his last fight, so he's been, you know, kind of sitting. But he's a guy that's been fighting very often and improving with each fight. And it's kind of, I think, maybe two, three fights away from, I think maybe even just two fights away from a title shot, perhaps overseas. It's a tight-knit community here, and I think they'll be very supportive. You know, the surrounding areas in the Bay Area, all the gyms and towns, you see them go through, you know, the gyms here and looking for work, and they're going to all congregate there. I'm excited, especially when it gets to the Armory. That's a cool venue. I really like it.
Gabe, Friday night fights, ESPN2, Kareem Mayfield takes on Emmanuel Taylor. Gabe, I just want to have one question. Why the hell is Kareem Mayfield still on our television sets?
I just don't know. I just don't know.
I find it amazing. This guy's one of the most unwatchable guys, and he just puts on some of the worst fights. It's almost like a Down syndrome version of Andre Ward, and he continually gets on television.
He definitely keeps me SoCal. I just, you know, it's just kind of to me like that that Bay Area guy, all the Bay Area guys that aren't here now, they would talk about him and try to, like, push him on me. And, you know, it's like he's we saw him down there in the wild card, and I've seen him up here. And it's always kind of the same, kind of like almost like junk balls, a guy that doesn't have a fastball.
Yeah.
He does everything else, kind of grabs you and mauls you. And, yeah, it's just not what I want to watch. And, you know, it's not a knock on his character or anything. It's just it's not entertaining. Just like, you know, I feel like Lara won. Do I want to see him fight again? I'm not rushing out to go see him, but you know, I wasn't impressed by the other guy either. But yeah, Mayfield, wow, it's going
to
be like
if we have any more calls, let's try to get as many as we can. We have about 5 minutes left.
You got it. In the 917, you're live on the next round.
Yo, what's up, guys? It's Francisco from Boxeo Mundial, man. I just called in a little late, but
Francisco, you got a couple minutes. Go.
What's up, man? Yo, I just want to know real quick, who you guys pick? I didn't hear you guys earlier. Who do you guys pick real quick? I mean, who won? Who you thought won?
I had Canelo by a couple of points, Gabe.
I had six. Well, my first score was a draw at live. Today, I went to the torture again, and I had it 6-5-1 for Lara.
Yeah, I had it 115-113 for Lara, but really thinking about it, when did Lara think he would win a decision against Canelo? I mean, that was like the guy knows this stuff has happened to him before. Why would he go into this fight thinking, oh, if I just win by points, I'll win this fight? I mean, he clearly fought a defensive fight and a very safe one, and Canelo looked like he was, you know, stuck in the mud looking for a mouse. You know what I mean? Like, he just never, he landed some good, pretty good body shots and one good uppercut, but pretty much that was it.
Francisco, I think, again, and I'll point this out, if you're as dominant as Rigo, maybe you can win a decision. But the thing about Lara, he's scraped by in the past with Carlos Molina, and he's had another couple of fights. You're like, he's on that edge, specifically against Angulo last summer. So he's a lot like Rigo, but he's not anywhere at that level of pure boxing ability.
Yeah, no, he's not at that level.
Defensive guys, I mean, he wasn't getting touched all that much. So, you know, he was to the body, but to the head he wasn't. And I think he felt at times in too much of a comfort zone. He was too impressed with his own defense. He was too impressed with his ability to land that single jab or the 1-2. Even underneath, I think he landed some shots on the way out a couple of times where he would make Canelo miss and he would touch him to the body. But it wasn't – you needed to bring that right hook back. And he started to do it late in the fight. I wish he would have done it earlier and just more often throughout, because I thought it was an effective weapon. And it also was a good weapon for the judges to see that he was scoring. But it was a frustrating fight.
Francisco, we got to get running. Anything else we could do for you?
No, that's it, man. I just wanted to, you know, throw that in real quick.
All right, thank you for joining us. Please call us earlier next time. Gabe, let's fit in one more call if we can here.
You got it. In the 602, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe, Steve, what's going on? It's Brandon.
Good. You got about 2 minutes. Go for yours.
Hey, man, I just wanted to say that I watched the fight on the radio, so I didn't know the crystal clear HD to break it down. but I got to say this, that, you know, there's a difference between boxing and running. And Lara was about two steps over that line. And, you know, what they say about those who don't get it is that they don't get it. And he didn't get the fact that he was going in there against the cash cow in his home turf. So, I mean, he has nobody to blame but himself. You know, he knew he was down two rounds before then. And as far as Canelo's next fight, I think they should give him a light touch or somebody a little bit easier to break down versus a Cotto or somebody like that. I'd like to see him in there with a Kirkland or preferably Quillen, though. I'd probably like to see the Quillen fight before I'd like to see the Cotto fight. I don't think very much of Quillen.
You know what? I've said for a while, and Gabe has always called that WBO title and his association with Heyman a shield. I think Quillen is being saved as the Golden Boy Showtime middleweight belt holder. That's why he'll never get Cotto or Golovkin, but I do believe eventually he is being groomed and being kept in a very safe, dry place for either Canelo Alvarez or a Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, most definitely. And then as far as the Algeri-Pacquiao thing, you know, they really don't have anybody else other than Terrence Crawford to put in there against Pacquiao. But, you know, and I don't think they want to do that. I think maybe Terrence Crawford's a little bit more dangerous than Chris Algieri at this point, even though he's at 135. And I think Algieri just needs to sack up, man, and take what they're offering because, you know, there's not too many more Manny Pacquiao fights left.
Nope. Absolutely not. Listen, thanks for the call. We got to run. We just got about 30 seconds to go, okay?
All right, man. You guys keep doing what you do.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Gabe, a very eventful show. Honestly, I don't know if I'm going to watch the replay. I'm going to watch the epilogue because they'll make that fight look like World War III, the all-access. But I just don't know if I've watched another 36 minutes of that. But, Gabe, another great show. Thank you very much for your participation. We'd like to thank everyone that participated on the next round. And so till next Monday, right here, same bat channel, same bat time. Till the next round, goodbye, everybody.